Hello, I'm Penina from Circle Care Services, and welcome to My BCBA Life. Circle Care Services is an ABA therapy agency, and we're all about giving BCBAs the support and community you're looking for. With this podcast, you're not on your own anymore. You're part of a BCBA community committed to making this world a better place to BCBA. Once this episode is complete, you'll be able to obtain a free CEU certificate for the clinical topic discussed. You'll need to confirm your attendance by taking note of the three surprise words I will drop throughout this episode. There is a link in the show notes below of a form that will ask you for your information and the surprise words that we need to generate your CEU certificate. Thank you, and let's get started. Welcome, Paola, to My BCBA Life. I'm super excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today. I'm Paola Ortiz. I'm a board-certified behavior analyst, and I have been in the field of ABA for 20 years. I have a master's of education in human development and psychology from Harvard, and I'm also a psychology professor for the last 10 years. So I definitely embed a lot of psychology and ABA in my everyday life and my everyday teaching. So I'm not just fully focused on ABA, but fully focused on incorporating both worlds. I'm also the co-host or one of the hosts of the Everyday ABA podcast, and you can listen to us wherever you find your podcasts. We launch every single Tuesday. And in that podcast, we are committed to demystifying ABA principles and applying them to real life challenges. So we talk about financial stability, we talk about mental health, we talk about parenting struggles, love, relationships, everything that you and I all go through in our normal everyday life, but putting it in the lens of ABA. And so that is my biggest passion, I think, is embedding ABA in everything that I do. I know currently in my current position, I'm actually not doing your traditional clinical ABA day-to-day work. And I'm the director of behavioral health, and I really believe that leadership happens in every single role and that you can use ABA principles in every role that you have, whether you are doing the typical clinical work, whether you're doing organizational behavior management, teaching, behavioral health, mental health, those types of things. So I'm excited to talk about all those different topics today.
Thank you. That's amazing. You know, there's some people who just talk and teach and have nice things to say. And then there's a whole nother persona, who someone who actually implements what they do. And it sounds like you're on that whole new level of not just teaching, but really living a certain way and giving it over to, whether it's through your podcast or to your students. And it's an honor to have you here. So let's go into this topic that we want to talk about, which, as you mentioned, you already started to touch on leadership. And I know you believe that leadership, as you mentioned, happens in every role. And I also agree that it happens in every role, but I think BCBA, being a BCBA, takes it like it's a real leadership position, because there's people under you and people who look up to you. So if you could just start by talking, in what sense is a BCBA a leader, and how to approach our job as such?
Yeah, that's a great question. I recently actually started joining something called Lean In, which is a like women's group for women leaning into their careers. And so in that group, it was really interesting that it was about six BCBAs. We were all in the group together. And as we were introducing ourselves, five out of the six, so everybody besides me, said, "Oh, I'm not a leader. I'm just a BCBA." And then the next person was like, "Oh, I do school consulting. I'm not a director, so I'm not a leader." And that really struck me, that every single person, because my title was executive director versus their title was, you know, this quote unquote just BCBA, they all described themselves as not leaders. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You joined this women's leadership group, yet you're not a leader. Because that's very incompatible with my philosophy, I guess, that a BCBA is a leader because we shape the behavior of others in our work, right? Whether it's with an RBT, with that caregiver that we're working with, or the client themselves, obviously, that we're shaping that. And so I don't believe that leadership is a formal title like clinical director or executive director, but I think that as behaviorists, that we influence people every single day with the behavioral influences that we have, right? Our behavior plans or whatever it is that we're following. We create structure, we're modeling professional behavior, especially maybe for a brand new behavior technician that this might be their very first job. And so we're modeling for them how to be professional, how to keep our cool, how to talk to parents, how to give feedback. We're hopefully always reinforcing others because that's a huge thing in ABA. And so to me, that's leadership in action. We shouldn't really think of leadership as just executives in a meeting or making big decisions or because I don't approve your time cards, I'm not a leader, right? You're actually showing leadership in everyday life with your leadership behaviors.
I think that's a very good point you're saying. And I wonder if it's when a person approaches their job as a leader, like it shows how lightly or not lightly maybe they take it or how impactful they think they really are. So I guess, why don't we talk about when a person goes into their job as a leader, meaning everyone could be a BCBA and then you have, and we're, you know, more or less practicing the same thing. But you could have some BCBAs who realize that they are a leader and some that don't. And why do you think that the BCBAs who recognize the fact that they are a leader might, what do you think the difference is from the BCBAs that recognize their leadership quality, I guess?
Yeah, I think some people argue that you're just born a leader, right? Like this is just a natural thing. But I think BCBA should believe that any behavior can be taught. So even you don't have to be an extrovert to be a leader. You don't have to be super organized, right? There's these traits that we believe make a leader, but leadership is so many different things. I think that BCBAs have the responsibility to ensure that they are providing applied behavior analysis every day. I sometimes will say, well, we have to do ABA, not SLI. And some people have heard that term before. And for those that haven't, SLI is something like it, right? So there's applied behavior analysis, which is research proven and works. And then there's something like it, which is like a token system or a little visual here and there, or maybe you do an assessment and you follow that. That's really not the best quality ABA that we can be providing. And so to me, that means that you're following the seven dimensions of applied behavior analysis in everything you do. For those BCBAs, I would argue to them that when you're modeling behaviors and giving feedback in real time, then that you're being behavioral, right? And your leadership is based on those observable actions, and they are rooted in the principles of reinforcement and shaping, which makes it conceptually systematic. Also, personally, I really follow this 1995 contingency model of leadership effectiveness, where what they found is that task-oriented leaders are more effective under two conditions. They tested like three conditions. So I'm thinking, well, if they're effective under two out of the three, maybe we just stick to that one just for ease, right? They found that when the group situation is really favorable, that task-oriented leaders are effective because it gives the leader the ability to move the team forward. So if the team is running like a well-oiled machine, and you are very directive and task-oriented, then you're going to push them to the next phase. And then really interestingly, they also found that in the situation where things are uncertain or there's extreme problems, maybe there's a merger, you guys are not hitting your billing productivity expectations, right? All these different things that can happen, change in leadership, a lot of people turning over, whatever, that also had task-oriented leaders be more effective because that required the leader to engage in really decisive decision-making. So I always stick to that because that contingency model tells me that being task-oriented is going to be the most effective. And I think that's conceptually systematic because I'm following research in that decision, right? And the research is telling me to be directive in order to have the best outcomes. So as I'm kind of going through the dimensions, I'm thinking, okay, I'm have to follow leadership research, which a lot of psychological journals have that. ABA also talks about that. You can also look at business journals and kind of read what they have to say. I try to incorporate a lot of different things, and I realize they're all saying the exact same thing, that they just might call it a different term, but they're all agreeing on what those most effective leadership behaviors are. And then we are supposed to really track our team's performance, right? So think of your leadership now just with your team, you're tracking not just the client's progress, but your team's performance. If you're doing that, then you're being analytic and you're then in turn, hopefully ensuring that you're being effective, right? So I'm trying to kind of check off all the dimensions of ABA there. And obviously, I want to make sure that my decisions are based what's meaningful to my team or to my clients, which makes sure that I'm being applied in my actual work. You know, some we might call that socially significant. And then obviously, generality also comes into play when we help our team generalize good practices again across clients, right? I don't want my team to just do it with John, but I want them to be able to generalize it and take those skills, hopefully, even if they leave the company I'm currently at, that they can then take those skills to another provider, another client, another company. So I think that in order to be a good leader in ABA, you have to live out the seven dimensions through your everyday behavior. And I've had that framework help when people have said, you know, I'm just a BCBA, I'm not a leader. It's like, well, you're leading this team into providing clinical outcomes, or you're leading your office to lower the wait list, right? Anyone can kind of insert your job title here. And like, what are you leading your team to? And then using that ABA framework to back that up.
My first surprise word is deep. I think you said like everything you said was so practical in the ABA space. So that was amazing. And I think something that kept like hitting me when you mentioned each thing, I think was like responsibility, is that when a BCBA comes to their case and they realize that because it's their knowledge and their expertise that is bringing the child to the behaviors they want to see, or the parents have concerns and it's their job to implement those concerns in the behavior plan, it's kind of like taking responsibility. And that is really taking each case to the next level. You could just have a case and okay, and just reviewing. But if you take that responsibility and say, okay, this is my team for this child, I want to make sure that we are taking the child as far as I can. And that really ultimately, I think, is a leader, someone who takes responsibility. And every BCBA is taking responsibility. Otherwise, you can't sign up on the case, right? So I would love to dig deeper in that sense to, because BCBAs are leading this caseload, how are not necessarily, you know, like they come as a team, the BCBA and the RBT, but obviously the BCBA is leading the RBT. So how would you recommend a BCBA as a leader coming and engaging with their RBT or BT to help the child to the next level, or really to help the RBT practice best method? So how would you say to approach that relationship as a leader?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because when a BCBA understands that they are a leader, again, regardless of their title, they're going to approach the job with, like you said, a greater sense of responsibility and intention. So I think it's not just about managing caseloads or writing behavior plans, right? So what I like to ask myself, and I do this with my team too, is I say, okay, ask yourself, regardless of whatever assessment you do, I know like the VVMAP is kind of popular and the Vineland, and oh, my funding source wants this one, right? Sometimes we fall victim to doing the assessment the funding source wants and teaching to that. Okay, let's put that aside for 1 second. If you only work with this child for 6 months, what are you going to teach this child in 6 months? Like, what will they learn because you were in their lives? Or you can ask yourself the same with parent caregiver training. Again, part of that guiding North Star, let's call it, with that intention, right? So I'm going to work with you for 6 months, and in six months' time, you'll know how to do this better because I taught this to you. That has even worked with me with the RBTs, because the RBT role, you know, being, I was an ABA tutor before RBT even existed. That was my job title was tutor, right? There was no behavior intervention. That hadn't been invented yet. Yeah. I think when supervisors said those types of things to me, that really made me have a lot of ownership of the program. Yeah, I had 28 drills to run that were in that book, but also like, what about my personality and their likes and dislikes? What were we going to work on, right? So talking to a parent and figuring out if for the parent, playing baseball is super important because the dad's really athletic, then let's lead the team to that, right? So now as a BCBA or as an RBT, I think if you see yourself as a facilitator of learning, of building that culture, you're a performance coach. With that mindset, your supervision does become a leadership activity, not just a compliance requirement, not just a check the box because the insurance company wants this, but because I have gotten to know the family, I have done my own like social validity type assessment to see what is important to them. What do I know my strength is so that I can leave this family, this child, this staff, right? Again, all the different roles and all the different hats that us BCBAs wear. How can I leave this better in 6 months? And sometimes when I say that, people get nervous, like, I'm not quitting. I'm like, I don't need you to quit in 6 months, right? In a year, in 6 years. But what are my short-term goals? We only talk about the short-term goals for the five-year-old. But what about me? I have short-term goals too. And that's going to, by having that, it, like I said, that's why I say intention, because now I'm very intentional with my time and my supervision. And I'm not just going to supervise 5% of the time because that's the board requirement. That's the minimum, right? That's right. Not the best. And that doesn't mean that's the cap. That's just the minimum.
That's also a good point. I keep also hearing from you, setting goals, being intentional by setting goals is really what keeps you as the leader, because you're the one setting the goals. And obviously you're hearing the BTs and RBTs out. What do they recommend? What are their thoughts? The parents as well. What's on your mind, right? But you're the one writing the goals in the learning tree, right? You're the one putting those in. So setting the goals and being on top of the goals is really what makes you that leader, because you're the one who's guiding them to the goals. And you kind of touched on the parents. So I just want to talk about that more, because some BCBAs have a harder time working with the parents and maybe imposing themselves as the leader. Personally, I find that when the parents know that they have a leader who's an expert in this field, they appreciate it. And I think it is nice not to come as authoritative or, you know, like I set the rules, but like I'm here to help you. And, you know, I am the expert here. So let's talk about what are your concerns and bring them into the picture. So I'm curious how you recommend to engage with the parents as a leader and how to have conversations with them, that you're hearing them out and setting the tone.
Yeah, because again, I think leadership isn't being loud or showy or coming in and saying, I've been a BCBA since 2011, right? No one's going to listen to, I wouldn't listen to that either if I met a BCBA that told me that they've been a BCBA since 2010, right? So they have one year on me. That doesn't mean that now I'm bought into it. I think that leadership is consistent, it's responsive, and it's really, again, because we're looking at things in the ABA lens, it has to be built on the science of behavior. So when working with parents, I would recommend that leadership means communicating with empathy while still standing firm in evidence-based practices. Sometimes I recommend that you have these, even if they seem like canned responses, in your back pocket when you're a newer BCBA. I think it's really helpful to have those responses. I recall when I was first new, and I was a lot younger then, right? And so parents would ask me, well, do you have any kids? Are you married? Do you know what it's like? Right? And it's not that they're questioning your authority and they're questioning your leadership. They just want to know that you understand what they're going through. And the reality is that as a very young BCBA, I didn't understand what they were going through. And now as a mom, I still don't understand what they're going to be, because my child is a neurotypical developing little two-year-old, as far as I know. So I'm still not 100% in the trenches with them, right? So being able to acknowledge that in just a human, empathetic way, I think is important. And we BCBAs get accused of not doing that and just saying like, well, I'm the BCBA. Do you want services or not? But instead, I think a canned sentence or kind of trope that you can have with you during assessments would be, you know, what's important to you? What's important to your family? And some families will say, well, I don't know. I don't know what you think we should work on. And so I do take a step back and say, look, I'm the expert in writing the plan, but you're the expert on your child. You know what's important to you and your family. If you go to church every week and you want your child to go to church with you, you would tell me and I will write you a plan for that. And sometimes families go, oh no, I hate going to church. Great. What else do you do on Saturdays? Right? Like no judgment. And they'll say, well, we like to go to my niece and nephew's games, but now we can't. Hey, if that's important to you, again, you're the expert on what works for your family, and I'm going to be the expert. You can trust me to write your behavior plan to get your child to come and watch an hour t-ball game. And so working on that partnership, we're partners, although I'm the leader in this partnership. I had a dad I worked with years and years ago, then I had a hard time because the mom was trying to get him involved in sessions. He didn't want to be involved. But it wasn't because he doesn't care about his child, right? It doesn't mean that he's checked out. I think he was nervous and scared. And so I kind of used my canned answer about how he's the expert, you know, what's important to him. And I remember about 2 months into my parent training with him, his wife said, he loves parent training with you because he said you're the coach and he's the quarterback. You just tell him the plays to run, but he's the real star because he runs the play.
That's
and that
a leader.
Has always stuck with me.
No, yeah. That is a leader. And
no, yeah, it just always stuck with me because it's such a silly example. And I never told him I was the coach and he was the quarterback. I would have never used a sport analogy because I'm not huge into sports. But I think what it showed me, you know, even whatever that was like 9 or 10 years ago, was like, oh, I am talking to him in a language he understands. And then he put it in a language he understood to his wife. And we used to do parent training on Saturdays. We used to go to Home Depot and he used to do those little crafty things with his son once a month. And that was important to him. And that was like his male bonding time where he and his son could do construction projects. And that's when the wife was like, oh, I said, oh, are you going to cancel on her? And he's like, are you kidding? I love my coach time. Like, I'm the quarterback and I'm the star of the team. And the way he explained it to her was so positive. And yeah, I guess, I don't
that's
know.
That's amazing.
According to you, that's a leader.
No, I do think so. And I think it's like to someone who's not, to someone who's never tried that as a leader, it sounds very like opposite because you're saying, one second, if I'm the leader, then I'm the one in charge. Why are you keep saying that he's the expert? He's in charge. And I think it takes a leader to be able to make another person on the team feel important enough to be part of it. And that's really how to get the team rolling. By telling the dad, like, listen, like, yes, I might be the expert in behavior, but you're the expert in your child. We need you here. And that is really only a real leader can give someone else like leader qualities. And when another person feels that leadership, and I think we mentioned already that a leader takes responsibility. And really, essentially, what the mom wanted was for her husband to take responsibility also and take part of it. And you made him into a leader. I think really that's what a leader is. A leader is someone who's able to make every person a leader, which in their own, with their own, I guess, characteristics and traits and their role. And like you said, you believe that every person's a leader. And when a leader recognizes that every person's a leader and they need to take responsibility for how they come into the picture, then that's just like a perfect world, I guess, where you were the leader, which you helped everyone else feel like they were the leader, which brought everyone onto the table and you saw so much success with that client. So I really think exactly that with parents, by being empathetic, recognizing that they really are it's their child, right? So yes, they hired us and they want us in the picture because they need help, but it's still scary because the parents are, I actually had a parent tell me, like, I don't want the ABA to change my child or make him different. So I don't know if I even want to go ahead with it. And I don't know where she got that from, but I said, like, of course not. Like, you're the mom. Like, it's whatever. It's about you. It's about what you want for your child. It's about what you want to see. So that, I think, is like being a leader is recognizing how everyone in the team plays a vital role and making them feel important. So without saying it, you just nailed it. So I love that.
Oh, perfect.
My second surprise word is testing.
Yeah, I think, you know, realizing that the leader is not, like in that example, you're the coach, right? You're not the Kobe Bryant of the team. You're not the Michael Jordan of the team, right? But you are leading them by harnessing their passions and their strengths. And so I think that that's the hard part sometimes with BCBAs. But now our job is not to implement the program. I might think that I am the best BT ever and I'm better than you, but my job is not to be the BT. It's to be the leader. It's to know that as a BCBA, I can help maybe 14 clients. As a clinical director, I can help 50. As an executive director, I can help 100. But again, knowing that now I'm responsible for 100 clients and I have to lead this team to get there. And I think that that is the hard part. So that's why I said maybe you can have practice like canned responses. If it doesn't feel natural to you at first, I think you can have, right? When a parent says, well, how do you know what to do because you don't have any kids? Then you can say, you're right. John is not my kid. I don't know what it's like to be his mom in your family, but I do know applied behavior analysis. And I think I can help you with what you want me to help you with. What would you like me to help you with? Right? It's not defensive. It's just acknowledging that feeling and then immediately redirecting it back to what you're doing. And knowing that as a leader, your job is not to do it all. Your job is not to be the rock star. Your job, you will be the rock star when all the people below you or next to you are moving the ship in the right direction, let's say. Your job as a leader, in my opinion, is to be directive, especially early on in someone's learning process. So whether that is with an RBT or with a parent, making sure you know exactly what the goal is, and your job is to direct them to that goal. I don't know if you ever heard, have you ever heard of the JAM study?
I didn't. Please share.
It was like a 2000 JAM study. No?
No.
Okay. Well, it's one of my favorite behavioral studies. I talk about it a lot because, and hopefully you'll need to come on this road with me because it's about JAM, but it's, okay. I think it's related to leadership.
I'm excited.
So in 2000, basically, researchers set up a table at a grocery store and they had free samples of jam, right? So in one condition, they displayed 24 different flavors of jam. And then in another condition, they displayed only 6 flavors. And what they found, the stats are that when 24 flavors of jam were displayed, 60% of the people that walked by them stopped. They sampled 2 flavors and then about 3% of those people bought a jar of jam. And in the second condition, there were 6 jams on display. 40% of people stopped. So they did have less people stop and try jam. They sampled 2 flavors. So they also sampled the same amount. But in that second condition, almost like 30% of people bought a jar of jam. So that was like a tenfold increase in actual action. So from that research, you can see that when people are presented with too many choices, it's going to lead to decision paralysis because we all feel overwhelmed. We delay action. Also, we make inconsistent decisions. And sometimes we just walk away entirely from making the decision. And you might be like, okay, but that how is that related to leadership? Like, I get your jam. I get the stats. But for me, I love the study and I talk about it a lot. At least once every 6 months, I'll bring it up because I think it directly applies to how we supervise and lead an ABA, because again, as a leader, you're not the Michael Jordan of the team. You're the directive person in the team. And so your job is to give the RBTs, the parents, any new BCBA that you're supervising, maybe you're supervising candidates for their BCBA. Your job is not to give them too many options, right? Whether it's what programs to write, how to respond to a behavior, how to set up data. If you give them too many options, they're going to freeze. They're not going to know what to do. And if you give them, if you hesitate or you give them inconsistent information, again, they're going to avoid making decisions to get altogether. And so as a leader, your job is to reduce the cognitive load, to be more directive, again, especially early on. So even with the parent, I would bring up the JAM study to any BCBA that I'm supervising to say, hey, you want the parent, do you want the parent to try JAM? Like, do you want them to try the strategy and walk away? Or do you want them to engage and buy the strategy and incorporate it into their everyday life? I think all of us are going to say, no, I want them to do ABA all day, right? Every day ABA. So then that means you want them to buy the JAM. So why are you giving them all these options? Why are you saying, well, you can take some data or you can work on this, you can work on that, read this book or not read this book? That means you're going to get, according to this research, if we were to do jam to parents, it would be 3% of the parents are going to actually follow your plan. No, I want 30% to buy into my treatment. I'm going to give them less choices. And it seems counterintuitive because if I'm a brand new BCBA, I don't want to infringe on a parent maybe and say and tell a parent what to do. I have new BCBAs tell me that, or younger RBTs say, how could I ever tell a parent what to do? They want you to tell them what to do. That's why they hired you, because you are the expert in this part. You don't have to tell them what the goal is. They can come up with the goal, but you have to draw the yellow brick road to get there for them. So to me, that's not micromanagement. That's leadership backed by research, right? Which again is conceptually systematic. And I have an ethical obligation to follow research in my decisions. It's not really the Paola method. Paola method's based on research. My methods are always based on what the research tells me. And so when you're narrowing that path of the yellow brick road of how to get there, you're actually going to increase action, whether it's the RBTs actually understanding or the parent satisfaction in the program. I've also supervised sometimes RBTs when I cover for someone that's on vacation or sick, and they say, well, I have 40 drills here, but I don't know which ones to focus on. And the BCBA means well, right? I think we're all trying to be nice by saying, do what you want to do, like have fun, play, but by not being directive as a leader, if that's more your BCBA style, what you're doing is you're not drawing a clear path for that RBT. So you're giving them way too many choices. They may not also know what their 6-month goal is. So the JAM study does show that, right? It shows that the less choices you have, the more likely you are to act. It's going to really highlight that the fewer, more clear options, especially to new staff or parents, or even parents you're just building rapport with, you're going to reduce their overwhelm and actually get them to be in action. And then you're going to be the star of your team because the clinical outcomes are going to show like, wow, this kid's doing so great because he's under your clinical leadership.
Amazing. My third surprise word is toy. That's amazing. And I do think as a leader, like you said, you have to bring the parents into the picture and be empathetic. So obviously the choices that you're giving them, though they're narrowed, they're choices that you know will probably work for this family in this situation. When you are giving them like every option under the sun, then it just goes that you're lacking what they need because 50 options won't work for one person. It's more natural for 2 or 3 options to work. So narrowing down, like, you know everything. So let's educate them in what will work for them. And let's see what they choose from those few options. So I think that was an amazing point you brought up. Is there any other leadership quality you want to bring in before we close? Because I'm loving this and I think this is so beneficial for every BCBA to hear.
Yeah, I think if I haven't said it enough, right, be clear, right? I think that a good leader is exhibits clarity. They're consistent, compassionate, and that you do have accountability. And maybe an exercise would be to kind of sit with yourself and think, you know, we all have leaders in our lives too, right? Even if it's just our boss, like what are those leadership qualities in our manager or boss or supervisor that we like and admire? And then kind of challenge yourself to think that again, just because they sign off on your time card doesn't mean that that's the only person on the team that's the leader, because to me, those leaderships are clarity, consistency, compassion, and accountability. But you might have a fifth where you're like, well, I really value this. If you value that, there's ways that you can, the fifth element here, if you value a fifth thing, then incorporate that. And say, I think that we as BCBAs are the most qualified to do the traits that we need, because again, don't just follow an assessment. Go back to the textbook of our job is to get a behavior and break it down and teach it. So if that leader, if leadership to you means like servant leadership or transformational leadership, like what are those, what's the operational definition of that? And then work on, maybe you write a behavior plan for yourself of like, hey, I really do want to have more clarity because it's hard for me to tell people what to do. I was actually just supervising a LMFT and she did tell me like, I really don't like to tell my team what to do. And it was interesting because now I'm supervising clinicians, you know, literal mental health clinicians that are struggling with this and bringing an ABA lens to it. And I'm saying, well, by you not telling your team what to do, do you see how at the staff meeting, they were all asking, wait, when is this due? What's the deadline? Do we have 30 days for this or 45? And it's creating a lot of stress, confusion, burnout, like role ambiguity. Like that team is not really well organized right now because she's trying to be really nice and she perceives being directive as mean, right? And I'm over here telling you today, like, oh, for me, a great leadership quality is clarity, because I want to be told exactly what to do. And I want to know if I'm in trouble with my boss or not. Yeah. And if my boss is clear, then I know where I stand. So yeah, to me, leadership qualities or leaders are clear in their communication and expectations. They ensure that their team knows what to do and how to do it. And if a team member can't do that thing, maybe you find somebody else on the team to do it, or you teach that behavior and that skill, right? And again, you have to be consistent all the time in your reinforcement and your modeling and your tone. And that's going to build trust with your team and predictability. If you say you're going to do something, you have to do it, whether it's with a parent or with an RBT, right? Hey, I'll be here Thursday to help you with that behavior that you're struggling with. I can't help you today, but I promise I'll be there Thursday, you know, whatever it is. And now they know you're human too. They know you're trying your best, but you're being clear with them and being predictable. And then I think compassion is also critical. We need to give each other grace, not just that I want grace for myself, but for the RBTs as well, or for the parents, because I think good leaders understand that people thrive when they feel safe and supported. And like I said, I wouldn't respond well to someone who just tells me what to do and doesn't explain why, or I would feel like, oh, they're just barking orders at me. So if I don't think I would respond well to that, then I'm not going to exhibit any behavior that I wouldn't respond personally well to. So sometimes we also learn how to be a leader by watching other people and realizing what not to do. Yes. I've also noticed that, right?
You have to learn from everyone. Sometimes you learn what not to do.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to copy that at all because I hate that behavior. So then if I ever catch myself falling victim to that, because I'm human too, and I might get overwhelmed or frustrated, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that because I hate when bosses have done that to me. So again, just knowing that as a leader, you are accountable, not just to the outcomes, but to your own behavior as well. And sometimes if you can, it is hard as a leader, I have found, to have a downline or your direct reports maybe give you honest feedback, because that's scary, right? Like, I don't want to tell my CEO what I really think sometimes because they're the executive. So maybe find other peers that can actually tell you, like, if you're like, hey, do you think that I was out of line there? You know, obviously, I want everyone to tell me that I'm the smartest person in the room, but that's not going to be the best for me,
right?
In my professional development. So maybe see if you can find a coworker that would be able to nicely, with grace, give you constructive feedback, or your old classmate that you can bounce ideas off of. I don't think we consult with other professionals enough because the insurance company doesn't pay for that, right? You're like, oh, I got a bill. But hopefully you work at a company that fosters that environment where you can have time with your colleagues and consult. Or if you're in your own private practice and you can't do that, then just find other people that you can ask. I think that would be good because, again, that's a way to keep yourself accountable as a leader. And you're seeking that, right? And knowing that leaders are constantly growing and constantly evolving. And I mean, I've talked a lot about different leadership roles that I've been in. But if tomorrow I did become a sports leader, which I don't imagine happening at all, I would have to learn a lot, right? I would still use all my leadership traits and behaviors, but I would literally have no idea what I'm doing. So know that sometimes you may be the person in the room that has no idea what you're doing, and that's okay too.
Yes. I was going to say, like, when you say you're a leader, people might feel the pressure of like, oh, that means I need to know every answer and I need to give every answer right away. And you're saying, no, a leader is really just someone who's communicative, clear, and if a person makes up an answer, that's the opposite of clear, because you're just going to sound really interesting. Like, if you don't really know what you're saying, then say, that's a great question, I'll come back to you tomorrow. You know, so all these things of the pressure of what it means to be a leader, it means that they're expecting me to be the one who knows the final answer and knows for sure what's going to work. And it's like, no, like, I'm learning just like you. And let's just work together to, you know, see what will work if you don't know what works or if you don't know the answer. I'll get back to you tomorrow. That's a great question. So you're taking off all the pressure. So there's no excuses for any BCBA to say, no, I can't be a leader. No, because you are the leader and you're the one who sets the tone and is really the one taking the client to the next level. So it's important to recognize. And you mentioned such critical traits that is not rocket science. It's really, you know, it's could be natural to people more than others, but really it's something that you could learn how to exhibit being clear, being consistent, being communicative. And I think you brought so much to the table. Thank you so much, Paola.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, again, just remember that you're the BCBA. So any behavior that you don't exhibit now, operationally define it and reinforce yourself for doing it, right? Catch yourself doing the behavior. Try to see if you could have friends, like I said, or coworkers that then catch yourself, like just like how we catch kids being good and we reinforce them, right? Write yourself a behavior plan and you can learn these things. I also recommend that you don't just keep your head in ABA journals. Maybe you read books on just famous CEOs and you realize that, you know, Steve Jobs didn't know how to build any computer, but he was the leader. Same with Elon Musk, same with Jeff Bezos, right? He's not driving around and giving me my Amazon packages. Like, even if we just think of, I don't know, like the top five most quote unquote famous leaders in the last 20 years, you'll realize, oh, they exhibited these leadership qualities, but they didn't have to be the expert on every single thing. Their job was to say, this is my vision, this is what I want to do, and put all the things in place to make their team do that. But, you know, a lot of CEOs currently will very famously in interviews say like, oh, I actually don't really know how that runs, or I have no tech savviness. Like, I don't know how to do these things. I just knew I wanted to invent this and I led my team there. And so luckily with us BCBAs, we're not that way. You do know the technology. You do know how to run the session. You do know how to take the data. So if these people had no idea could do it, I think that you as the BCBA that knows how to run the drill, knows how to break down the behavior, knows how to reinforce, knows how to track the data, then that should be then 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 equals, right? Like, we should be able to easily be like, oh, so then now I can lead it. But now maybe that's the difficulty. Like, oh, the leadership behavior is new. So define that leadership behavior and then know you are the expert in all these things. And now you're just working on increasing that leadership and just looking at it as, oh, I'm the point person. I'm the coach. I'm the one that's telling them what play to run and teaching them that, right? We have all the skills. I think that we are, as BCBAs, better suited to be leaders than half of the other leaders in any other profession.
It's true. It's true. Everything you said is just so true and so clear. You have such a clarity. I'm saying, talking about leaders needing clarity, you have such a clarity when it comes to talking about this. So I learned new things and I think everyone else did. So I will please ask you if I could put your podcast that you run, Everyday ABA, in the show notes. I think people will be very inspired from you and want to hear more from you. And any other info you want me to drop in the show notes so everyone could access it, that would be great. And I really enjoyed this conversation. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, if anyone wants to follow me on Instagram at everydayaba.3, I'm happy to engage in conversations and just talk. I'm always looking to grow our BCBA circle, right? And have more support. And so I appreciate getting to know you in the last couple of weeks, and just recording today has been so fun. So thank you for this opportunity. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in today.
Thank you so much.